You are Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast on the Houston Rockets, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Happy Friday, everybody. Welcome back to Locked On Rockets, the home for daily discussion of Houston Rockets basketball. I'm your host, Ben Dubose, Rockets correspondent for Sports Talk 790, the team's official radio flagship. As we chat this Friday afternoon, the Rockets are currently on a plane as I'm recording this to Oakland, California, getting ready for Saturday night's crucial Game 6. Rockets up 3-2 in the Western Conference Finals. The Rockets will have an opportunity to close out the series incredibly tomorrow night and advance to their first NBA Finals since 1995, just one win away. The good news, Chris Paul is on the flight with the team to Oakland. The bad news, as you probably know by now, he's not going to play. Already ruled out for Game 6 with that right hamstring strain, which we saw happen in the final minute of Game 5, the 98-94 win on Thursday night. And if you have not already heard my recap of that episode, I encourage you to go to our Locked On Rockets archives where you can find my thoughts on the game. Today's show is going to be more looking forward. I'm actually calling this the Chris Paul FAQ, Frequently Asked Questions episode, because we're going to be talking mostly about that injury, both the short and long term, what it means for the future of the rotation as long as Chris is not a part of that. If you want more discussion of what exactly happened last night, then that's what our usual recap is for. Today's show, I want to give everyone as clear of a picture as we can. About 11 o'clock was when the Rockets sent out the news release that he was ruled out for Saturday's game. As far as what's happened since the game last night, Chris left the arena. He told Mark Spears of ESPN, who saw him getting in a car, that he was all right, and he hinted that he would play in Game 6. We know, after talking with James Harden at practice today, Harden actually met up with Chris Paul after the game. They talked, hung out until about 2:30 in the morning, said talking about life, laughing, cutting up, all that sort of stuff. And the vibe is that it's no big deal. However, we have heard incremental reports, according to Ramona Shelburne of ESPN. A Rocket source told her late last night that the hamstring was really sore. ESPN's Tim McMahon, first thing Friday morning, quoted a Rockets official as saying, not good, when it came to how his hamstring was feeling today. So he went to the Rockets facilities this morning. He did go through an MRI. The Rockets did not disclose what the MRI said, but ultimately, what matters for the short term, he's out for Game 6. And as far as a potential Game 7, if there is one, if the Warriors win tomorrow night, and let's be real, they are going to be favorites according to the books that I'm looking at. They're 12-point favorites right now, although I think that margin is definitely overdone. A potential Game 7 of the Western Conference Finals would be Monday night at Toyota Center. The Rockets are saying that Chris would be reevaluated upon the team getting back to Houston. So the good news is that from what we saw from Chris, he was at practice day. I mentioned he's going to be on the flight. We'll address that in a little bit as well. But he was stressed out. In terms of walking, there was not much of a limp. And what little limp there was, it's hard to say what's the hamstring and what's the foot issue, that right foot or Achilles, whatever it may be, that we know he's been dealing with for at least a week now, and not the hamstring. Really, he seemed to be moving around just fine. Now, I understand that starting and stopping the way a point guard does in an NBA game is a completely different beast. And even if he can walk without much hindrance or grimace, then playing an NBA game is very, very different. That said, the vibe of Chris being around his teammates, dressed out, at practice, I've seen NBA players with catastrophic injuries who are effectively done for the season. This was not that vibe at all. And so I think that's important to keep that in mind. Now, a lot of this is us guessing because no one, except for the Rockets themselves, understands the MRI results. And that's a big deal in this. Is it a grade 1, a grade 2, or a grade 3? It's obviously not a grade 3. If that were the case, that's a partial or full tear. He would be shut down. He might even have to have surgery. We're talking about either a grade 1 or a grade 2, and there's a big difference in those. A grade 1 is typically 7 to 10 days. A grade 2 is usually 3 to 4 weeks, and sometimes as long as 6 weeks. Grade 2 is what James Harden had back on New Year's Eve, and it was supposed to keep him out 4 to 6 weeks. He ended up returning after just 2.5 weeks. The Rockets disclosed the MRI results back then, I think, because it was the regular season. There wasn't that much harm in full disclosure. At this point in the playoffs, no one wants to give out information to their opponents or any more information than they have to. So I understand why the Rockets are being a little more cagey, and it's not just a Rockets thing. For example, when Chris, I cited last night in the postgame show, injured his hamstring in the 2015 first round game 7 against the Spurs, he played through it, actually ended up with the game winner over Tim Duncan in that, then missed the first two games of the semis against the Rockets the following week. The Clippers also did not disclose exactly what grade it was, the nature of the strain. That's commonplace this late in the season. But ultimately, while it's not released, it is a big deal because, for example, if it's a grade 1, you're expediting a timetable, you know, a week to 10 days to, you know, 3 to 4 days, which, while it is faster, it's not going to be fully gone away. It's not quite the same as expediting a 3 to 4 week timetable to 3 to 4 days. So that's a big difference in terms of his recovery, and I don't think anyone but the Rockets themselves knows. However, my sense is just seeing Chris dressed out, hanging out at practice, going on the plane flight, I have a hard time envisioning it being a situation where there's no hope of him playing for the remainder of this series, no matter what. I can see some uncertainty. Of course, they have to see how it responds. But I don't see any reason to fear extreme scenarios at this point. So I'm going to get into the FAQs in just a moment, but to lead off, just an overall assessment that I want to throw out there, this definitely hurts. Chris Paul is one of your two superstars, one or two all-stars, whether he technically was this season or not, and you're going up against a team that has four. It's a big loss. As Mike D'Antoni said after the game, he has effectively won them, referring to Chris Paul, Game 4 and Game 5, because of how brilliant he was in the second half of those games. It's a big loss. However, I'm looking at Game 6 as a game in which the Rockets were going to be underdogs regardless, even if Chris Paul was completely healthy. And I still think, based on what I've seen, that there's a reasonable chance that he can play in Game 7. More on that later, so I'm not seeing it as fatalistic as a lot of folks seem to, as far as the Rockets' chances. Also, in terms of Game 6, I honestly think it's a little bit of a weird dynamic. The Rockets, they shot just 37% overall, 30% from 3 in Game 5, missed a lot of good looks. James Harden, 0 of 11. It feels like some of those guys, especially Harden, are primed for a bounce-back performance. They are too good of shooters to continue to struggle to this amount, and now that Chris Paul's out, it presents an entirely, I would call it, weird dynamic to where if this game is even close in the second half of Game 6, all of a sudden, I think the pressure squarely goes to Golden State, and it's almost a, we can't blow this, can we, dynamic? And then if you combine that with James Harden getting going again, and I think James has no choice but to shoot 25, 30 times in Saturday's Game 6, in my opinion, just because you're not going to have that much creation without Chris. I think that's where you're really going to miss Chris. It's not so much the Rockets, at least with Harden and Paul, have had big assist numbers this series, because they haven't. It's just against a historically great team and great defense like Golden State, many times you just need guys that one-on-one can create a bucket. And one of the best things that Chris has done for the Rockets this series has been just throwing in threes off possessions that seem to be going nowhere with 5 seconds left and no real action and kind of just alone in a one-on-one isolation situation. Hashtag what your ones look like. So the Rockets are definitely going to miss Chris, and if he can't return for Game 7, it's a pretty big blow. It doesn't have to be a fatal blow, but I'm not willing to go that far at this point, and if it ends up costing the Rockets the series, we can lament that after Monday's Game 7 and feel sorry for ourselves for, you know, weeks, months, however long you guys want to. For now, the Rockets are 48 minutes away from the NBA Finals, and really their ultimate dream, because the Rockets, even without Chris Paul, are going to be overwhelming favorites over Boston or Cleveland if they get to the Finals, and that's important to keep in mind. the Rockets are not feeling sorry for themselves. The Rockets, they realize what an opportunity it is, and they are just one game away. And go back to last year, the Rockets beat the Warriors with just James Harden as the only star. Even the Warriors with Kevin Durant. It has happened. This is, while a sizable mismatch in talent without Chris Paul, it's not enormous. Much crazier things have happened. And if you want an analog, by the way, think back to Game 6 of Spurs-Rockets last year in the second round without Kawhi Leonard. When the Spurs, up 3-2, coming back to Houston, everybody assumed that, oh, Kawhi's out, but he could return for Game 7. Oh, yeah, the Rockets will take care of business, and then we'll figure out what happens in Game 7. But after winning a close Game 5, the Rockets, there were a lot of mental demons there. There was a lot of fatigue. There was a lot of scarring. I'm not saying the Warriors are mentally in as bad a shape as the Rockets were after Game 5 in San Antonio, but there's a lot of fatigue on the Warriors' side as well. I think that's why Game 5 was such a weird game. We had so much choppiness. I think both of these teams are starting to wear down a little bit, especially now that it's every other day, the routine. And if the Rockets go in there and play the brand of defense they brought for most of this series, and Chris Paul, for all his strengths, playing on effectively one leg for a lot of this series with the foot Achilles injury, whatever's been going on with that right foot, defense has not been at the forefront of his qualities. So I don't see any reason the Rockets' defense to necessarily have a big fall-off without Chris. If they bring that and they put the pressure on Golden State in a game where they're favored by double digits, much, much crazier things have happened than a scenario where the Rockets win tomorrow night in Oakland, California. So I think that's important to keep in mind right off the top. But getting back into what the point of this show was supposed to be, which is the FAQ. Ever since the news broke this morning, I've had a lot of questions on my Twitter timeline, at Ben Dubose, about the hows and whys of this scenario. So that's what I want to get to in the second segment. Then in the third segment, we'll address the direct rotation impacts without Chris Paul and what that means. First, why did the Rockets announce it today? Why not wait until tomorrow and leave the Warriors in a period of uncertainty? My answer to that would be, I don't think that makes a big difference. We've seen the last two games. Andre Iguodala has been questionable for both of those, ended up not playing. Klay Thompson was listed as questionable before Game 5, did play, and ultimately it didn't seem to help the Warriors a whole heck of a lot. At this point, I think the Warriors and Rockets have played each other 8 times during the season. They are pretty knowledgeable of what the other wants to do. They know these two teams, each other inside out, and at this point, it's a grind. We've gone past the point of this series just being logical, and here's the X's and O's of how it should work out. There's a lot of fatigue. There's a lot of, as I said, just weirdness to this, and it's almost kind of just which team can grind, can gut it out. And last two games have been there for the taking with 5 minutes to go, and kudos to the Rockets. They've been the mentally tougher team, in my opinion. They've avoided the big mistakes late in the games that have plagued the Warriors, and so ultimately that's tipped a couple of swing games to the Rockets, and that's why they're up 3-2. So I don't really see a big advantage in keeping the Warriors in the dark about this. In my opinion, the bigger issue is if you say, well, he's a game-time decision, we'll see, it's sort of a looming cloud. It's a distraction over the team because you have players that are wondering if he's going to play. You have all the media speculation and questions. I think if Chris is not going to play, it actually is just a cleaner break to just come out right and say it. And that way, the Rockets at practice today and anything they do before the game tomorrow in terms of their prep, they know who's going to be out there, and it's not a guessing game of how this is going to end up. So to me, there's two ways of handling it. I think, you know, maybe with the Warriors, Steve Kerr is trying to play some gamesmanship, because I don't really buy that they didn't know what was going to happen with Andre Iguodala until an hour before the game. But the flip side is, how much of that really helped them? So, you know, you could argue that maybe the Rockets should have done the same thing with Chris Paul, but ultimately, I don't know how much that really helps. I think the Rockets just want to be forward about what's going on with Chris and let the team proceed accordingly. I've also seen questions of, is it a bad sign that it was announced so quickly? And I would say no, because of the reasons just laid out. The Rockets, they practiced early today at 11:30. short night of sleep for all of us, but of course it makes sense to do the practice before you get on the plane flight as opposed to going on a long plane flight and then practicing afterward. So if you're going to say that he's out for at least partial reasons of letting the team move forward without him, then you issue that before the team goes to practice. That only makes sense. And of course, they go to practice, that's also the media availability. So if you don't want to talk, then you need to put that out there before the media does its daily sessions. So I don't personally see that much there from the standpoint of it's a bad sign that they announced it prematurely, or maybe not even prematurely is not even the right word. It's that they announced it so early in the process. I just think that's logistics. What made the most sense with the Rockets practicing at 11:30 a.m. on Friday morning before boarding the afternoon flight to Oakland? One of the more interesting questions that I've seen involves him getting on the flight to Oakland, California to be with the team. Because if you listen to my postgame recap at Locked On Rockets last night, one of the reasons I said I expected an early decision was that if he was going to be ruled out, not to let him on the plane so that he could get round-the-clock treatment. Well, they did make an initial decision, but they are letting him on the plane, which is contrary to my initial take on it. And after doing a little bit of digging, I think I jumped the gun in treating all injuries the same. There are some injuries to which air travel can be very damning. For example, back spasms, and we had a lot of that in the Tracy McGrady era in Houston. Airplane seats are notoriously bad for those injuries. In terms of a hamstring, especially a charter flight with lots of space to stretch out, it's actually not as significant as certain other injuries. And the other tiebreaker, as far as I've heard, in terms of do you keep him in Houston or go, keep in mind that all of the Rockets medical staff is going to be in Oakland with the team for tomorrow night. So if you want him to prep, yes, I understand there are great hospitals in Houston, but in terms of the Rockets' own people, they are going to be out in Oakland. And think about between Game 3 and Game 4. We know he's had an issue with his foot, his Achilles, whatever it may be on the right side. He said he made a lot of progress between Game 3, which he seemed to struggle, and then Game 4 when he had 27 points, 5 of 9 from 3. He said he made a lot of progress in that foot between the two games. Well, that was out in Oakland with the Rockets personnel. So if the Rockets staff is going to take the lead on that, and that's certainly fair to assume, that it might make sense for him to stay with the team. And yes, there are other aspects too. Certainly, I think he wants to be out there. Chris is the closest thing to a coach on the floor that you will ever see. So having him on the sidelines, he still sees the game in a way that very few players do. So there are potential benefits to having him out there. And of course, if the Rockets are able to pull off the upset, then I'm sure he would enjoy being able to celebrate with his team. All of those things are true, but ultimately the bigger factor is getting him back either for Game 7 of the Western Conference Finals or the NBA Finals beyond. And if staying home were to give him a better shot at doing that, I think that would be the play. However, from what I've heard, the nature of a hamstring injury specifically combined with the Rockets medical personnel all being with the team, it kind of tips the scales to where, well, I don't know if it tips the scales to where it makes sense for him to go, but then you combine it with the obvious stuff, which is that he wants to be with the team, and I think that's what ended up making the decision there. And as far as the specific things he's likely to do for it, as far as ice, elevation, any injections, those types of things, well, you can do that on a plane. You can do that in San Francisco the same way that you can in Houston. So I apologize. I think I overplayed that angle a little bit myself, and I think ultimately him going on the trip is not necessarily a pessimistic sign in terms of his availability for a Game 7. Now, what could be a pessimistic sign for that, we have seen a couple of veiled reports, most notably Mark Stein of the New York Times, who cited some pessimism from Houston over his potential, referring to Chris Paul, availability for a Game 7. In my opinion, it depends entirely on who you talk to. If you're talking to someone in the Rockets front office or with their medical team, look, it's natural to be pessimistic. Quite frankly, it's not a given that even if the Rockets win tomorrow night, that Chris would be ready for game one of the NBA Finals, which wouldn't be until next Thursday. And I say that as someone who thinks he could play Monday. That's because even if Chris does play Monday, it would only be because of the heightened sense of urgency. The analog I keep going back to is the 2015 hamstring strain he had against the Spurs in Game 7 when he played out Game 7 but then sat out the next two games, which were non-elimination games, to start the semis against the Rockets. Look, hamstring injuries do not get better in 3 to 4 days or do not completely heal. They can improve to some degree, but they're not going to heal in 3 to 4 days. So if you talk to someone that is not Chris Paul, that's either a Rockets executive or someone on their medical team, they're going to have some skepticism over it. It's a tough injury to heal up, even in a span of 72 to 96 hours. That said, some games are a lot bigger than others. And in a do-or-die against the most talented team ever assembled, arguably, in the Golden State Warriors, the four All-Stars, Kevin Durant, Steph Curry, Draymond Green, Klay Thompson, in Houston, with a chance to go to the NBA Finals for a guy in Chris Paul, who at 33 years old has never been there, to me, it's like the Game 7 scenario against the Spurs on steroids. Now, it could be possible that this is a Grade 2. They're not telling us, and if this is a Grade 2, then it may just be impossible. But that's just not the vibe I got from seeing him walk around dressed out in his practice gear, those types of things. However, I can't rule it out. I can't tell you guys 100% that it's not. And if it is, then yeah, he's not going to play. But ultimately, I think while on paper there's reason for pessimism, in reality, it's a case where a competitor like Chris Paul is highly likely to step in, especially if his absence is particularly felt in Game 6. I just see it as a scenario where the player likely overrules whatever the common medical practice is to get out there for a Game 7. That's my opinion. I'm not trying to say that I think Mark Stein is wrong. I think, depending on who you talk to, you would find people that are skeptical about him coming back even in 3 to 4 days. But personally, I think given the stakes of the situation and what we've seen from him in the past, I think in a one-game scenario, he would do it. And that's not going to heal it, and he might sit out the first couple of games of the NBA Finals if the Rockets get there to let it further heal. That's a scenario that we've seen in the past, going back to that 2015 analog. But as for me personally, I can't see Chris Paul sitting out of a do-or-die Game 7 unless it is just literally physically impossible for him to move at anything more than a walk, and meaning it's at least a Grade 2 injury, according to the MRI and the testing they did. And just based on what I've seen from Chris interacting with his teammates after the game last night, at practice today, getting on the plane flight and going with them tomorrow, I just don't see it at that level. I think the odds are he gives it a go in Game 7. If it goes there, the question is how effective he is. And then from there, as far as games that are not do or die to start the NBA Finals, if the Rockets are able to close out this series, well, you'll have to wait and see. I think it'll be touch and go, really, from here on out, because the hamstring injury is not going to fully heal itself until he gets several weeks off, and that's not going to happen until the offseason. Now, as far as what this means for the Rockets who are going to play, we heard from Mike D'Antoni that it means that Luke Bamute is probably going to rejoin the rotation. He was in it the first three games of this series, but seemed to struggle. I don't know if physically is the issue. He's dislocated his shoulder twice this year, most recent being April 10th, right before the season ended. I think physically the shoulder is fine. I think it's more he looks reluctant to take contact at the rim, not finishing with authority, and against a team as dominant defensively as Golden State, that leaves you prone to getting rejected at the rim because you're not going up with the requisite authority to finish in traffic. He's got a few days off. Maybe that makes the shoulder even more rested to where he's feeling better about it. We'll have to wait and see. But ultimately, Chris Paul was playing about 40 minutes a game in this series. I don't think you're going to thrust Luke Bamute into a 40 minutes per game role. And actually, if Luke is still struggling to the point where he's not able to hit open threes and he's missing shots right at the rim on his cuts, it wouldn't surprise me if Luke only ended up playing 5 or 10 minutes. I think this is going to be very touch and go as far as who fills those minutes for the Rockets in terms of the choice that Mike D'Antoni makes. As far as the starting lineup, of course, Eric Gordon is going to replace Chris in the starting lineup. That's something that happened back at the start of the year when Chris missed 15 games with the bone bruise in his knee, and Eric performed quite well in that role. In fact, at times, he looked like a quasi-all-star, and Eric was your leading scorer last night, and he's hit the two dagger threes in the last couple of minutes of Game 4 and Game 5. So I think Eric goes in there feeling pretty good, and defensively, he's been a pretty big part of what you've done over these past couple of days. Certainly, Trevor Ariza, P.J. Tucker, your normal defensive stalwarts, get a lot of credit. Clint Capella, 12 and 14 last night. But even guys like Eric Gordon and James Harden, they've been a big part of your identity. So I really don't see defense as a big fall-off without Chris. As I mentioned earlier, I actually think Chris defensively has been compromised. Where Chris has helped you this series is making big shots in big moments, bailing you out in isolation situations when Golden State's defense seems to get the ball sticky. I think with the foot injury he already had, it's not like it's been a dynamic defensive series for Chris Paul. And I actually think Luke Bamute, for whatever minutes he plays, would actually be an upgrade over what you would have with Chris Paul. The question is how much Luke can give you offensively and just how playable he is based on what his deficiencies on the offensive side are. So we'll have to wait and see exactly what that means. But as far as the minutes, filling the 40 that Chris Paul would play, I think you'll generally bump Eric Gordon from about the 35 he's been playing to 40, so that'll take five of them. Well, that still means that there are about 35 elsewhere that you have to fill out. So I think Gerald Green, who's been playing about 15 minutes a night this series, you could expand him to, I would say he'll at least play 25. You could more than that, but it depends on exactly how hot Gerald is from the perimeter. He did make 3 of 5 threes in Game 5, which is a good sign. Defensively, he's been very hit or miss. We know the deficiencies he has from time to time, but we've also seen him reject Steph Curry a couple of times this series and make some dynamic plays. So I think with Gerald, with Luke, it's going to be, as I said, very touch and go, very minute to minute, what they are giving you. So I think you're going to expand Gerald's minutes from 15 to 25. So, you know, as far as the 40 minutes, I'd say 5 more to Eric, at least 10 more to Gerald, possibly more than that, but they'll just have to see how he's going. And then that leaves a hole of about 20, 25 minutes that in an ideal world, Luke Bamute would be himself. And I've seen him working out before Game 5 at practice today. His stroke looks really good in practice, but the issue for Luke has ever been practice. It's about game situations, and I think the mental hurdle of potentially taking contact, especially against a tough defense like the Warriors, so we'll have to wait and see exactly what translates to the game. But if Luke can't do it, Mike D'Antoni went out of his way to say that he could play an 8 or 9 man rotation. They've been doing a 7 man, which is the starters plus Gordon and Green. I don't think it's as simple, given Luke's liabilities, that, well, you're just going to plug Luke into that 7th role off the bench. They could go deeper. They could try Joe Johnson. They could even try Ryan Anderson. I don't think they'll try Nene in this series, because it seems that when Clint Capella isn't out there, the tuck wagon is the way to go against the flexibility, the switching of Golden State. But I think some of those veterans, Joe, Ryan, they could get a look if Luke is not up for the call. And it's just going to come down to what guys can make shots and hold their own defensively. I think Mike D'Antoni has to go into it with an open mind. Like I said, I think of the 40 minutes that Chris plays, I think 15 of them are easy, just bumping up Gerald's minutes a little more and Eric Gordon going into the starting lineup. And beyond that, I think those extra 20, 25 minutes, I think Luke gets the first crack, because you know he'll be solid defensively. And if Luke is able to be even passable offensively, I think you could be better defensively in the absence of Chris Paul based on the lineup combinations you're throwing out there, just because I don't think Chris, already limited with the foot, Achilles, whatever it is, was really giving you that much. Still a very smart player defensively, don't get me wrong, but I would say very limited in terms of actually stopping the ball and any dribble penetration in this series. And then when switched on to Durant, I would say he's smart. A couple of times he's reached in, but ultimately just undersized in that scenario. You could even be better defensively. The question is, of course, filling the holes offensively, and the Rockets are just going to have to go minute to minute. And ultimately, it's a tall order, but much crazier things have happened throughout NBA history. All three of the guys that we've referenced, Luke Bamute, Joe Johnson, Ryan Anderson, they've had moments even this season which they have been perfectly viable, if not above average NBA players. And we all know what Gerald Green can do. Keep in mind, Gerald Green had a game when Harden was out against Golden State with a hamstring injury in early January. Gerald Green stepped in and had 29 points on 9 of 16 shooting in 34 minutes against the Warriors. That was literally a week after getting signed by the Rockets, so his conditioning wasn't even good to go at that point. So maybe Gerald Green surprises us all and is able to stretch it out even to 30-plus minutes. We'll have to wait and see. The bottom line, you know his defensive limitations, at least in terms of awareness, know the athletic limitations, some of the others, and of course what's going on with Luke Mute and the twice dislocated shoulder. So I think the Rockets are just going to have, it's going to be a patchwork approach. I don't think there's a one size fits all. We're just going to throw this guy in there and he's going to fill the minutes. It's going to take a collaborative effort. But ultimately, it would not surprise me if they thrive, and it would not surprise me if they end up winning that game Saturday night. I'll put that out there. I'm not going to predict it, but it wouldn't surprise me. I remember after Luke Mute, and I'm not comparing Chris to Luke at all, but after Mute's dislocation, the second-to-last regular season game, all the fatalistic takes about how he was essential against playoff opponents. Well, the Rockets, without him in the playoffs, they won at an 800 clip, and now they're up 3-2 over the Warriors, with Luke being essentially a non-factor. This team is resilient. They're deep. It's next man up. It's tough without Chris Paul. I get it. But at this point, it's a one-game scenario. You've done the heavy lifting, which is taking three of the four games. At this point, you've got to get one more. And you do have a home game seven, even if you don't in game six. Much crazier things have happened. The pressure is on the Warriors. I think there are definitely some fatigue issues. What is at the heart of this series, which is the Rockets' defense just sort of grinding the life out of them, especially in the fourth quarter when the Warriors had just 12 and 22 points the end of games four and game five. Steph Curry and Kevin Durant both way, way under 50% from the field in those stretches. The hallmarks of that are still there. The identity of the Rockets is there. All the pressure is on Golden State. I think there's a lot of reasons to believe that James Harden is due for a bounce-back performance. And if those things happen, even at Golden State, at Oracle Arena, it's one game. Much crazier things have happened, and if the Rockets could somehow get that game tomorrow night, just imagine what that would do for Chris Paul, because it would give him basically a full week off before the NBA Finals start next Thursday in Houston. Assuming, of course, that the Rockets are able to advance. Knock on wood. So with that, I'll wrap up our Friday show. As always, thanks for listening. You want more content in the interim, best place to get it is Twitter. I am on there at Ben Dubose. Show is at Lockdown Rockets. Also, website, lockdownrockets.com. Facebook account at facebook.com/lockdownrockets. And email address, lockdownrockets@gmail.com. I think I mentioned the lockdownrockets.com website in there. Sorry, I'm running on about 4 or 5 hours sleep today after a long night, after a thrilling Game 5, so bear with me. But all of those are places you can ask me questions, make suggestions for the show, advertising inquiries, access our content. Anything we can do to make this a better podcast for you, the diehard Rockets fan, would absolutely love to hear from you. Also, if you're not subscribed to us already, iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, Megaphone, wherever you listen to your podcast, the odds are you can find Locked on Rockets there. And if you subscribe, that's how you get our episodes right when they come out. You'll get a notification. And also, if you subscribe and leave us a 5-star review, that's the best way that we can look attractive to potential advertisers, which is the way we can make the business model work as the only daily podcast covering the Houston Rockets. Also, one final perk for Saturday. I mentioned this ending last night's show, but for anyone who missed it, the Rockets are actually having a relief drive for Santa Fe High School, the tragic school shootings of a week ago. The Rockets are opening up Toyota Center for Game 6 viewing. So if you want to go down there, take in a game with a bunch of diehard Rockets fans and also support a great cause, there's a $10 cover to enter. You can buy your tickets at Rockets.com, and all proceeds go to the Santa Fe relief efforts. So to me, it's a lot of fun. I'll be down there, and yeah, if you see me, say hi. I would love to chat and hopefully celebrate a Western Conference championship victory tomorrow night. Certainly not banking on it without Chris Paul, but much, much crazier things have happened, and what better way to celebrate if they do it than with thousands of other diehards in downtown Houston with, well, all of our money going to a great cause in terms of the Santa Fe relief efforts. Bravo to Tillman Fertitta and the Rockets for everything they've done on that front over the past week, which has certainly been a hardship on that community located just 30 miles southeast of Houston. Anyway, for now, this is where we can leave off, and maybe I can catch one more nap before getting, hopefully, a long night's sleep tonight to get ready for Game 6. Hopefully, you guys can as well. And then after it's over, of course, we'll be back here at Lockdown Rockets to break down either a Western Conference Championship victory for the Rockets or the looming Game 7 Monday night and whether Chris Paul would be available for that one. For now, enjoy your weekend, and thanks again for listening to me here at Lockdown Rockets, the home for daily discussion of Houston Rockets basketball.